Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 27, 2017. More fighting in the former Upper Nile state forces aid workers to evacuate its international staff.
As we speak, there is an ongoing operation by the SPLA on the western side of the Nile in former Upper Nile state towards the town of Kadok. They are on the edge of Kadok.
And Rebecca Nyandeng says she will not participate on the steering committee for the national dialogue.
The majority of people who are aggrieved, like for example those of Dr. Riek Machar group, are not there, and there are other new groups who just came up, like those of Thomas Chirilo and other people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The medical group Medicines Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, says it has evacuated its international staff from Abroch and Kwadok towns in Fashoda State because of intense fighting this week between South Sudan Army and rebel groups in the former Upper Nile region. MSF Spain Country Director in South Sudan, Marcus Bechman, says thousands of civilians are in need of urgent help at a camp for internally displaced persons at Abroch near the town of Kwadok. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Marcus Bachmann says at least 38,000 internally displaced persons are at Abroch and receiving health aid services, but warns that number is likely to double as more South Sudanese escape the fighting. Bachmann says the area is not safe for international MSF staff because of the stepped-up fighting.
We had to reduce our team in this area of Kwadok and Abroch. We had to evacuate the international team from the area. We are operating still with a national staff team, which maintains essential services open as long as the situation, as long as their safety and security allows.
Renewed fighting broke out between opposition forces and the South Sudan Army in Kwadok on Tuesday. Bachmann says his medical team is treating gunshot victims as well as vulnerable women and children in the area suffering from diarrheal waterborne diseases, pneumonia, and respiratory infections. MSF says Abroch can only be reached by air because of unpaved or poorly maintained roads. In February, aid agencies stepped up airdrops of relief items to the area, but ongoing fighting has interrupted some of those deliveries. Bachmann says some 25,000 new South Sudanese families arrived at the Kama this week. He says most are fleeing Kwadok, Lul, and Panyikang counties in fear of their lives.
The population we are serving is fleeing the places where they had settled, like Wau Shiluk, like Tonga, out of fear of being targeted in a conflict. This is what the population is telling us. They fear being targeted. They also share with us accounts where either family members or neighbors, population from their community, had been targeted, and they saw them being targeted in the conflict.
SPLA Deputy Spokesman Colonel Santo Domich confirms that government and rebel forces have been fighting in Fashoda State over the past 2 days. Domich says the SPLA launched attacks on SPLA in opposition bases to flush out rebels from the area.
The rebels is squeezed up, you know, in those areas, trying not to give an opportunity for anybody to use the river. And they were actually deciding to use food as part of war. This is why we decided now to think that these rebels, they don't care about the life of people of South Sudan, whether they die or not. This is why we went in and tried to clear all routing of River Nile as well as Sobat. it was under the control of the rebel, both the Kodok and Galashiel.
Domich says the army liberated Kodok and Galashiel on Wednesday. SPLAIO military spokesman Brigadier General William Gadjas says government forces captured one of their bases but denied Kodok and Galashiel are under government control.
The fighting is still going on up to now. They have not even pushed our forces out of the town. So there is a heavy fighting going on up to now. So if they are claiming that they have already captured the town, that is not true.
MSF says they are struggling to meet the needs of all the new IDPs. On Tuesday, thousands who arrived in Abroch had access to only 60,000 liters of water per day. That works out to 1.7 liters per person, well below the 2.5 to 3 liters needed for survival. In early January, MSF had to close its hospital in Wausiluk due to ongoing fighting. Bahman calls the situation a disaster in the making.
We can continue, if security permits, for a few more days, maybe a week, 10 days. If you're not able to bring in staff and essential medical materials, we will not be able to provide sustainability services.
MSF is calling on both parties to ensure that all civilians are protected from the fighting between warring parties so they can receive humanitarian services. Bahman says MSF provided emergency bags containing medicines and supplies for staff fleeing along with the IDPs so they can provide basic treatment in the field. The evacuation of MSF staff comes a week after other NGOs evacuated at least 68 workers from different parts of Jonglei State due to deadly fighting. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on that story, the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan confirms that South Sudan Army is actively fighting rebels of the SPLAIO in the former Upper Nile state. David Shaira says fighting is going on in Kodok.
Right now, in terms of the conflict, as we speak, there is an ongoing operation by the SPLA on the western side of the Nile in former Upper Nile State towards the town of Kodok. They are on the edge of Kodok. People fled to Kodok from Wausiluk when Wausiluk was taken by the SPLA.
Sarah says the fighting has affected thousands of families who are escaping violence in the area, adding that some aid agencies pulled out due to insecurity.
So there's around about 50,000 people in Kodok and people who have been displaced there as well, who are on the road to Abarak and possibly to the Sudanese border.
The top UN diplomat says the conflict in South Sudan can only be resolved through peaceful means. Shaira says the leaders of the East Africa region and South Africa have locked out rebel leader Riek Machar out of South Sudan in the interests of peace.
The feeling very much within the region is that his role in terms of bringing him back wouldn't necessarily be positive at this stage. So that's the decision of regional governments in South Africa.
But Sarah says the President Kiir's national dialogue should include rebels loyal to Riek Machar. Civil society activists and residents of Yei say the relationship between the army and civilians have worsened in the last few days. Residents want state officials to redeploy soldiers far from civilian population to reduce cases of looting and rape. As Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba, the state governor says criminals are to blame for raping and looting that's taken place over the past few days.
Kemis Benson, a civil society activist in Yei, says, who is ever to blame? Civilians are always the victims of targeted killings and rapes in Yei.
The citizens are the most vulnerable because most of the insecurity, harassment, the fears, the killings that are happening are all targeted on the civilian.
Benson says state government officials should realize that civilians need protection, food and health services, all of which are lacking in Yei. A Yei resident who does not want to be identified for his safety says there is widespread insecurity in Yei.
For the past 1 week, the relationship between the youth civilians and the the soldiers has been not at all that good. Where we had witnessed several events in one of the areas, that is Jigoman, where there have been a lot of robbing, raping of women and girls throughout for the past 1 week.
He says the people of Yei town are unable to travel 5 kilometers outside the town. The Yei resident says once civilians are found on the outskirts of town, they are either shot or arrested.
We witnessed an event where a farmer went to just nearby places here, that is Sopiri, to go and make some kind of irrigation to his crops, because we have been experiencing a lot of drought. Rain has not been all that frequent this year. So as the man went to his garden, he was found by some soldiers. So the soldiers just shot the person and dead and just left him like that.
He says criminal activity by government soldiers has prevented farmers from cultivating their farms, and now there is no food in the state. Colonel Santo Dominic, the deputy military spokesman for the South Sudan Army, denies his forces are targeting civilians in Yei River State.
We are mandated by the Constitution to protect the integrity of this country. And Yei is not part of Uganda or any other country. It's the Republic of South Sudan. And we are free to stay wherever we think that we can provide security.
Yei River State Governor David Lokonga Moses says errant soldiers are to blame for the looting and raping of women and girls in Yei.
This is one of the serious issues people are expressing. Earlier, I think there were some problems. But what we know is that we are able to apprehend some of those who are mobilizing, you know, some people running after one gun and is going to loot the people. We have number of those whom we have apprehended who are under investigation and they are going to be taken to court.
Earlier this year, President Salva Kiir visited Yei and ordered that soldiers who rape women and girls be shot. Since that time, reports of rape committed by men in uniform have continued. There are no reports that soldiers who have raped women and girls in South Sudan were shot dead. Lokonga says Yei town is now calm, but there were reports of clashes earlier this week with a group of armed men in Morobo County's Kimba village, which is about 40 miles from Yei town. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Raja, where residents of Raja town say they cannot find food in the market because most traders have fled the town after fighting broke out more than 10 days ago. The residents say they cannot even find drinking water. Most of the population of Raja remain displaced. As Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba, state officials are appealing for humanitarian assistance for the thousands of displaced citizens of Raja.
Father Richard Batista, head of the Catholic Church in Raja, says more than 80% of Raja's estimated 60,000 people are still sheltering on farms out of town since fleeing the fighting that rocked Raja nearly 2 weeks ago.
People are now in the bush, something like 5 or 6 kilos out of Raja. Those who are in Raja, there are about 5,000 in Raja. It's very bad. Today, even I went to the market, there is no food, there is no what. Only there is no mango, and there are some few food which is people now they are trying to see and to get for themselves.
Batista says families trying to travel from Raja to refugee camps in Sudan's Adaen in East Darfur are in bad shape.
There are people who are going to the North Sudan, going on foot, by car, by donkey, by whatever. They are going out, actually. There is a problem of water. There is no water, and the distance is very far.
Sebit Goni is a shopkeeper in Raja Market. He says most shops in the market are owned by Sudanese traders who have left Raja for security reasons.
As I speak to you now, I don't know how am I going to secure my breakfast. We might just have to eat mangoes. The butchers are closed. We have not had meat for the past 3 or 4 days now. We don't have fish. Some of these traders are just trying to get out of here. They cannot bring in goods. Most of them are foreigners trying to get out of the country.
Mariam Umar, a mother of four, says there are only a few food items and other commodities available in the market. She says prices have spiraled out of control.
A kilo of sugar is now 260 South Sudanese pounds, A bar of soap is now 300 South Sudanese pounds. Peanuts and cassava are very expensive. On top of that, bad things are happening to us. We are being robbed in our houses by men in uniform. They beat you up and take your things. Me and my children sleep on plastic sacks because our beds have been taken from us.
Musa Hassan is the Director General at the Minister of Health in Lolo State. He says the displaced in Raja are very vulnerable to diseases and other health problems. He says more than a dozen deaths have already been reported among the displaced.
Among these refugees are elderly people, children and women. At least 11 children and 4 elderly people have died. Malnutrition has also set in among them.
Hassan says diarrhea and pneumonia are already spreading among the displaced people around Raja who have no access to medical help. LOL Information Minister Omar Ishaq admits the humanitarian situation is very bad.
We call on all humanitarian organizations to try to save our citizens. They are still sheltering in farms and fields around Raja town. They are in desperate need of medicines, clean water and food.
Despite the deteriorating conditions, Raja remains calm after the fighting that broke out when a rebel group attacked the town on April 14th. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese refugees in Uganda describe atrocities they were carried out by men in uniform. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what advice would you give to a young parent?
For a young parent, he should find out how he can sustain the wife and the baby at the moment. Like, he should not sit idle by just waiting or for the mother of the child to be the one to run up and down.
We should focus on our family because there are so many other factors that will derail our attention from our family. We should have friends, yes, but the friends we should make is the friend that help us to build this family.
I would advise a young parent to, like, they don't know anything about being a parent, visit friends or even ask their own parents how to parent a child, the things to do when they are crying, when they are misbehaving.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has appointed dozens of people to the National Dialogue Steering Committee, but one prominent South Sudanese politician whose name was added to the committee is citing a lack of inclusivity and says she will not take part in the national dialogue. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Rebecca Nyandengdema Bior is one of the 103 members appointed by President Kiir to the National Dialogue Steering Committee. The former presidential advisor on gender issues and human rights and widow of South Sudan's founding father, John Garang, says she won't be joining the committee because its mandate is unclear and its inclusivity is questionable.
Dialogue that we have been calling for was a dialogue that which will be inclusive of all the people of South Sudan who are aggrieved, so that they become a party to that. And then also they will be secure to speak freely about what is their problem. Then they tell us what they are aggrieved or what, so they are free to talk about it.
In February, President Kiir announced the national dialogue would begin in early March. But since then, opposition and civil society groups have also complained that the dialogue is one-sided. Presidential spokesman Atenua Katen says the committee is part of the president's efforts to ensure that the dialogue involves all South Sudanese. He says the dialogue is meant to cement and complement the peace agreement and to find a solution to the conflict in South Sudan. Aten says Nyandeng should be part of that solution.
By declining from the steering committee, which was meant for leading the dialogue among the South Sudanese, I am afraid Madame Nyandeng has deprived herself from having a meaningful forum from which to put forward her belief on how South Sudan can rejuvenate itself.
Nyandeng says she was never notified of the appointment and only learned of it while she was traveling. She says her message to Mr. Kiir is to work towards a genuine national dialogue where all sectors of society can participate without harassment or intimidation. Nyandeng says the only way that can be attained is by making sure representatives of the warring parties are included.
Some of the group of IO are not there. Maybe he has consulted with Taban, but he has not consulted the majority of people who are aggrieved. Like, for example, those of Dr. Riek Machar group are not there. And there are other new groups who just came up, like those of Thomas Chirilo and other people. Their names are not mentioned, like those of Dana Lor and other people who are really aggrieved.
Speaking to reporters in New York yesterday, UDMA's chief David Shearer says he believes it is important to include former First Vice President Riek Machar in the peace process.
The constituency that he represents must be part of the of any peace process, in any process that moves forward. So we've made that point very clearly. And particularly, for example, when the president has announced his national dialogue, we have said repeatedly that that has to be inclusive, and that must be also include the constituency of Riek Machar as well.
Along with the committee members, the presidential decree included positions for a secretariat from the Juba-based Ebony Center, the South Sudan Council of Churches, and the South Sudan Islamic Council. And President Kiir's decree includes unnamed representatives from 7 African countries, including South Africa and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
A senior Ugandan official is appealing to the international community to donate more money to help the government deal with the large number of South Sudanese refugees that continue to pour into Uganda. Uganda's Minister of State for Internal Affairs says the refugees have strained the already limited resources in Uganda. For VOA News, Mungume Davis Rakarinj reports from Arua District.
After visiting camps that host thousands of South Sudanese refugees and witnessing how aid agencies struggle to provide help for families escaping violence in South Sudan, Ugandan Minister of State for Internal Affairs, Obiga Maria Kanya, says his government is working extremely hard to ensure that South Sudanese who made their way to Uganda get food, shelter and clean water, but also to ensure the security of its citizens.
Uganda is not a very, very rich country per se, but the available resources such as hospitals, the roads, and schools and so on, they are really overstressed. And of course, there are also challenges that some of these refugees in a few cases could be a security threat. So the moment refugees come, that extends the security awareness, the security consciousness of the government. That means we spend more resources on the refugees, on the people because of the refugees, like we have to deploy the police more heavily.
The year-old Simon Sule, who fled from Kajokeji in February, says life in a VIP refugee camp is challenging.
We are told to depend on the little food items that is being distributed. It's something of 12 kilograms per person for 1 month. And that food which is given cannot last even for the whole month. 2 to 3 weeks and then it's over and people continue starving.
Sule says there are very few health facilities in the camp and patients wait for hours to get medical attention. He also says there are not enough schools for school-aged children in the camp. Gloria Tabu, a single mother of two, fled Yei and traveled through the Democratic Republic of Congo for days on foot before arriving in Uganda. She says her 5-year-old daughter, Vanessa, walks at least 5 hours a day to access the only primary school available in VIP camp. Tens of thousands of South Sudanese refugees have been fleeing to Uganda since the recent wave of violence that started in Juba last year. Uganda now hosts more than 800,000 South Sudanese refugees. More than 572,000 of them arrived in Uganda in search of a safe place to live after violence erupted in Juba last July. The UN Refugee Agency says at least 172,000 South Sudanese refugees have fled to Uganda this year alone. The Ugandan Minister of State for Internal Affairs says it is the obligation of the international community to assist the Ugandan government to provide refugees with shelter, health care and security.
Please, the international community should know that the sacrifice Uganda is making to accommodate refugees is very, very great.
And we really appeal to the international community to come to the aid of Uganda in this respect. They will not be only helping Uganda, but they will be making a contribution towards the humanitarian aspects of international life.
The UN Refugee Agency warns the lack of funding could affect thousands of families living as refugees in Uganda. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Arua District, Northern Uganda.
Still on refugee issues, South Sudanese refugees escaping to Uganda say South Sudan government soldiers burned down their homes in Pagiri County of former Eastern Equatorial State. As we hear from Simon Apiku in Adjumani, the refugees say government soldiers forced them to flee their villages, leaving almost everything behind, including property, livestock, and even food.
South Sudanese refugees have accused government soldiers of committing many atrocities in their villages following renewed violence in the country in July. Alfred Taban, who now resides at the Agodzo refugee camp in Adjumani, says when villagers fled, government soldiers moved in and ransacked their houses, then set them ablaze. Taban says he had to leave all his belongings behind when he fled for his life.
When you are running, you cannot collect everything. Things like clothes and other things, these petty things. You cannot carry this heavy other heavy materials. So, in fact, most of the things were left.
Cecilia Dzwa is another refugee at the Agodzo camp. Speaking in her native Mali language, she says after collecting everything they could find, the soldiers started destroying houses.
It was the army. They removed the grass from the roof of our houses. The houses that are far from the main road, they simply set on fire. They looted everything from houses nearer the road, loaded the items onto trucks and began selling them. The government soldiers are the ones doing all this.
Taban says a few days later, some residents who had taken refuge in Nimule on the border with Uganda tried to return to their homes to retrieve any property that might have survived the raids, but found their houses either destroyed or completely empty.
What we left there were also taken, destroyed. Things like household materials were taken. Even they went to the extent of removing even some of the material inside, like the chairs, other things which were left.
Dua, one of the women who returned to her village of Loa in the hope of recovering a few valuables, says she returned to the camp empty-handed. She says the soldiers harvested crops the villagers left on their farms and sold them in markets in Juba and Nimule.
They plugged out all the iron seats on the roof of the houses and are still selling some in Nimule. The soldiers also removed metal doors and windows.
Father James Opi, a Catholic priest who used to serve at the parish in Loa, says the church compound housing the priests was also vandalized. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Adjumani District, Northern Uganda.
That report by Simon Peter Apiku brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Morina Opi Dri by Lansen. We have been listening to Lanson Lee with the song Morina Opidri. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Lele.
and away. Oh.